Hi, this is Mary Banks, and today I am interviewing my husband, Emiliano Lopez. Emiliano, or Emmy, as his friends and family call him, was born in Montevideo, Uruguay in 1995. He lived with his mother, his grandmother, his aunt, and his two uncles. In 2002, with no American contacts and no knowledge of English, Emmy and his mother moved to the United States on their own. His mother chose Utah as their new home for the state's religious community, as well as the academic and professional opportunities available to her son. She wanted a fresh start and a new environment, and she certainly found it. I'm with my husband, Emiliano. Do you consent to me recording this conversation and using it for academic purposes?
Yes.
Thank you. So when did you and your mom move to the United States from Uruguay?
We moved to the United States from Uruguay in March of 2002.
Okay, and how old were you?
I had just barely turned 7. My birthday was in February, so I had my birthday in Uruguay and then moved up here shortly after.
Do you remember anything about that flight to Utah?
Yeah, there were a few flights. I think it was a 23-hour journey in total. And the first flight went from Montevideo, which is the capital of Uruguay, to I believe it was Lima, Peru. And then there was a long flight from Lima to Los Angeles, and then from Los Angeles to Salt Lake City. I remember specifically the longer flight from Lima to Los Angeles being a huge plane, you know, multiple floors, and it was the first time that I had ever seen a plane like that, or I had ever flown in general, so it was pretty exciting. And I remember playing the games on the screen. I think at the time I really didn't understand too much of what I was doing, but just kind of like was along for the ride.
Didn't really know what you were getting yourself into.
Mm-hmm.
Did you immediately go to school, or did you guys wait a while to enroll?
So, from what I can remember, since it was March, it was, you know, right in the middle of the year. I think the grades in Uruguay must have been a little different because they weren't really sure where to put me. They ended up putting me in the second grade, I believe, and I finished the year out. So I had a few months there where I think I started school probably a week after I got to the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember your first day?
Yeah, kind of. I remember walking in, and I think my teacher, her name was Mrs. Pat Itheraldi. We're still really close friends with her. She's been to my high school graduation and a few different things. But she kind of introduced me. And I'm trying to think, I remember I made a buddy the first couple days. His name was Amir Rahislik. He was from Austria, I think, and we kind of bonded over like soccer. He really liked soccer, and we played during recess and stuff. But it was obviously the language barrier was tricky, kind of starting out there.
Did he not speak English either?
He did, but he had a bit of an accent, so I think we also related on that, too.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember hearing English for the first time in school?
So, I was fortunate enough to be able to go to I went to a bilingual preschool when I was in Uruguay, so I had heard English, but obviously it sounded very different than what I heard when I went to school here. My main takeaway, my mom always tells the story that I came home my first day from school and I just said, you know, they talk really fast because I could understand a few of the words, but it was just the speed was really throwing me off. And I felt like the teaching that I had received in Uruguay in regards to English was totally different than the way that people spoke, you know, casually and conversationally. So it was kind of like starting over.
And do you remember any of the more chaotic parts of school, what it sounded like when you heard lots of English at once, as opposed to the more formal setting of the classroom, whether it be the cafeteria or the playground?
Yeah, I mean, you know, second grade, first grade, you know, kids are running around, you know, doing whatever. And I think in class, it was, you know, the teacher would repeat things a few times for me, you know, especially when I was just barely getting there to make sure that I understood what was going on. But as far as chaotic things, I mean, just kind of getting to class, getting around, it wasn't so much, you know, just a new language, but it was a new school, a new, you know, new surroundings, all that. So it was kind of, it was tricky to get around, find my way, to feel confident, to ask for help, that kind of thing. So I kind of felt like I was on my own for a while there.
You eventually became your mom's translator until she was able to also learn English. When did you feel confident enough in English to be able to tell her what people were saying?
So I didn't feel confident. It was more of a, it was more of a, I had to do it, less than,
Necessity.
yeah, it wasn't, I didn't tell her, okay, now I feel confident to do this. It was kind of just thrown right into it. It was, you know, the first week going grocery shopping or whatever.
The
And
first week?
yeah,
Wow.
no, just having to,
Do you remember that grocery shop?
no, I just remember her just wanting to ask questions or ask where things were, and we had to point at different things, things like that. And over time, obviously, I got a little bit better, but I spent a lot of time basically talking to people for her, you know, in my broken English or kind of what I knew. But I spent a lot more time around English. I was going to school and stuff like that, where my mom was, you know, trying to get a job and working alongside people that spoke Spanish, so she didn't have as much exposure. So I kind of took that role from an early point there.
What did it feel like when you were the mediator? Did it feel intense or was it pretty casual?
It was pretty casual. Obviously, I was really young, so I feel like people took it easy on me. And when they realized the situation of, you know, a single mom with this kid who the kid barely knows English, they would, you know, dumb things down for me, and they were super understanding and this and that. I feel like I've seen situations with adults trying to help each other out and translating, and I feel like that's been a lot more, people are a lot more rude or a lot more impatient. But when it was a kid, I mean, I was, you know, 7, 8 at that time. People kind of took it easy on me and were pretty kind, so.
As I wrapped up this episode and was going back reviewing the different elements that were sensory related, as that was my intended focus, I realized that for someone like Emmy, reflecting on memories like his early experiences in the United States, delving into those sensory elements can be painful. It can be scary, and it can raise a lot of old feelings that haven't been reflected on in a long time. And I've gained a lot of compassion, not just for him, obviously, as my partner, but in general, towards people who have had these experiences and, when asked to confront them, have a difficult time speaking of them in a clear and sensory way, because memories don't exist in a vacuum. They're not objective. They're someone's life. And I've learned a lot of respect through this whole process of respecting the interviewee, respecting people's experiences, and respecting people's stories, because everyone's so different. And a memory that may seem interesting or, you know, we may be curious about carries a lot more weight for others than it may seem.